As the saying goes, life isn't all fun and games. Or is it? That's part of the idea behind Endless Studios, a youth-focused game-making studio and learning hub, which also is on a mission to empower students all over the world by enhancing access to both technology and education. Endless also provides devices, technology tools, and even special operating systems to help children learn. I'm Cody Combs, your host for Business Extra, and for this episode, we're speaking with the founder of Endless, Matt Dalio, who's on a mission to improve how children are educated and expand access to technology. Matt says the Middle East and the UAE in particular are great places to help make all these ambitious things happen. We also reminisced about some classic computer games, but more on that later in the podcast. Joining me now on Business Extra, Matt Dalio, Chairman and Chief Executive of Endless Studio, a technology company seeking to provide equal opportunity to succeed in the digital world through device access, offline internet, and learning games. Matt, thanks so much for joining us on Business Extra.
Thank you for having me.
So there's a lot to unpack with that. That's a very all-encompassing description, but it's very, very interesting what you do. Can you kind of tell me a little bit more about what Endless Studio is and does?
Yeah. So Endless has two halves. It has the Endless Studios, which is focused on youth game making. And then it has the Endless Foundation. The Endless Foundation is focused on democratizing that and getting that to everyone. If I double click into each of those, I'll start with the Endless Foundation because that's really the roots of what we do. So we started with the realization that in order to have equal opportunity in the world, you need to have access to the same tools that make the modern world work. So, and that's a computer. About 5 billion people don't have a computer and or internet access, and that means 5 billion people won't be equal access citizens of this world. And so the way we think about solving that is if you can make financing available for laptops so that all of a sudden people can pay small little payments over time with a pay-as-you-go technology that unlocks it when people pay, that all of a sudden unlocks financing for a couple billion people more. And so now with that tool, the most powerful educational creative tool in history, now all of a sudden they can do so much. And so in the process of doing that, we also looked and asked the question, because ultimately the goal is to get people jobs, right? Why is an education important? It's because it creates livelihood. And we looked around at most of our engineers. And if you say, what's the one skill that you could teach in order to be able to get people a job, it would be the process of the capability to build software. And what we realized was that almost all of our engineers had learned to code in the same way. It wasn't in college, it was as kids. And what was it that they were doing as kids? They discovered they could hack their games. So this is how Elon Musk learned to code. This is how Mark Zuckerberg learned to code. This is how Google's AI lead learned to code. This is basically like everyone who knows how to code today learned in this same way. And so we realized that you can use the massive engagement of youth in games to teach youth to build software. And so that's what Endless Studios does.
So the devices themselves, in which countries, in which territories, in which areas are you guys distributing them? Have you distributed them? And correct me if I'm misunderstanding that device aspect of it.
Yeah, correct. So our biggest focus right now is on Endless Studios, the game studio. But we have actually just started doing stuff in the region on the laptops as well. We've been operating the game studio for a couple of years here. And actually, we're really excited to announce a youth game making competition in the UAE. We're doing in partnership with Bayanat and Tawazun. And so that's really the main focus of what we're working on. As you go to places that don't have access to laptops, our goal is to have everyone have access to the skills. In order to have access to the skills of software, you have to have access to the tools. And so as we spread across the region, we hope that, that the laptop unlocks access. And so we're working in Jordan, in Egypt, hopefully in refugee camps and places beyond. But it really, the UAE is the epicenter, and that launch really happens with the announcement of this competition here.
You sort of took care of my next question. Are you headquartered out of the UAE? Do you have a branch in the UAE? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have a US team and a UAE team. And if you look at what we are, Endless Studios really is a community where people can come together to build in collaboration with each other. So we have tools and programs that teach people to build. And then we have something we call the hub, which is basically a destination for people to come and build games together. And in the process of building games, they learn art, design, engineering, management, and then they learn the marketing side, how you take something to market. And those really are the skills of entrepreneurship. So our team is really actually dual-based. It's in the U.S. where there's incredible game-making talent, and it's in the UAE. If you think of why the UAE, we are effectively a marketplace, right? In other words, a place where people come together saying, I want to build games and I want people to help me build games. And those two things we match. When you look at marketplaces like Uber, they're best made in what there's a person who wrote a book called The Cold Start Problem, and it talks about making network effects. And it really talks about starting with a speck. So when Uber started, it started with a little speck of San Francisco, and it created that network effect in that place. And so for us, as we look at like the whole world around, where is the small little speck that we can start where there's incredible conviction about the importance of teaching these 21st century skills? And there is no country in the world that, and I traverse the whole world, there is no country in the world that I have found that is more visionary, more convicted in the need to educate its population in the coming skills, like AI, for example. Like AI is going to infuse itself in everything. There is no country in the world that is more focused and with a greater degree of, like, you know, just oomph, quite frankly, than the UAE. And so when we look the whole world around, I can't imagine a better country to start from than the UAE. And that's why we're here.
And many of our listeners, of course, have tremendous business acumen, and they heard your last name, Matt Dalio. We should point out your father, Ray Dalio, founder of Bridgewater Associates. That's the world's largest hedge fund, established a family branch office in Abu Dhabi. But you've been all over. And what's interesting to me about you is you, at a relatively young age, you spent a lot of time in Beijing. How did that inform your worldview?
And it's infused in ways that I often put it, if you melted it out of me, I don't know what would be left.
And I grossly oversimplified it, I think. So feel free to...
Yeah. So I flew to China as an 11-year-old. I lived with a Chinese family. My parents were still in the U.S. I went to an all-Chinese school. So it was complete immersion. And I often put it that I became a bit Chinese. I mean, that was the most formative domino that set in motion everything else in my life. The clearest domino after that was I then started at 16 years old, a foundation working with rural orphanages in China. And that totally reconfigured my life understanding of really what matters, like what is a purpose in life. Because I realized as a 16-year-old, I literally was able to provide surgeries that saved lives. And so my whole life mission since then has basically been about making the world a better place, which is kind of an oversimplification. But at a 16-year-old, like that was just so infused into the core of my being. My time in emerging markets in China and other emerging markets really laid the groundwork for me to realize I can make a difference in emerging markets. And so that's what set Endless in motion, as I realized that I was at Stanford Business School at the time. The smartphone was taken off in, you know, in Silicon Valley, but it was non-existent basically in emerging markets back in 2010. And I realized smartphones were going to sweep across emerging markets. Computers weren't. There was an opportunity to democratize access to that, but that those two tools would change the face of the planet and provide the largest opportunity to uplift quite literally billions of people, you know, since printing press and the Industrial Revolution.
A lot of people study abroad, so that's not so much different. You were 11 when you went to China. I'm kind of asking you to speak for your family on this, but what was the genesis behind them saying, okay, I want you, Matt, to go to China at age 11?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a crazy idea, right? Fly your child to China at 11, especially China then was, this was 1996. So it was a very different place. My dad had gone to China by coincidence for the first time the year I was born, like within months of me being born, and fell in love with it. And he took our family there when I was 3 years old. And so, you know, literally my first memories are in China. And he saw what it was going to become. He's a macroeconomist, and so he kind of saw the large arcs. But he also just loved the history and the people. He had no reason to be there because at the time there was no money there. He had no reason to be there other than a passion for the people and the culture. And so at 11 years old, he set that idea in my mind, and it was up to me to do it. And I decided to leap into it and to do it.
I want to circle back to video games. Why are video games the best way to teach kids, in your opinion? And I ask that because even this day and age where gaming is very lucrative, you can make a decent living if you're very, very good at it. It's in the zeitgeist. You're in the mainstream if you're into games now. But still, there's this stigma out there that, oh, he's sitting there playing video games, or she's just sitting there playing video games. Why are video games, you think, so crucial?
Yeah, so I'll describe two versions of what games are to teach. The first is a game that you can play to learn. There's a whole lot I could say about that in terms of really games leveling up skills. They're basically giant learning engines. In other words, you do something, you face a challenge, you have to figure out how to overcome that challenge, you get better at the skill, and then you face a bigger challenge. And that leveling up is so highly engaging. And if the thing that the core skill that is required to level you up is a skill that's applicable in other parts of life, then you are learning things that are directly applicable to other parts of life. That's the play to learn side. The other side is the process of making a game. If you can build a game, you can build a piece of software. Games are also the most multidisciplinary piece of software. In other words, they involve the right brain and the left brain. They involve the artist and the storyteller and the designer, and they also involve the engineer. And when you take it to market, you also have to think about product market fit and how you, you know, get on Facebook to make your Facebook ads. So the process of making a game is basically the process of making a little startup. And those are the skills of innovation that are as relevant to a large enterprise as they are to a small little game. So the question now is, how do you teach these skills to youth, the skills that will ultimately get them jobs, again, whether it's in an enterprise or in a small little company? And engagement is the key of education. If someone spends hours doing something, they will learn those skills far better than if they are not interested in and someone's like, okay, do your homework, multiplication tables. You know, someone's not going to get very good at that because they're not going to put the hours into it. So if you look at like the number one engagement tool that we have available to us as humanity to engage youth, it's games. The average kid spends 10,000 hours playing games by the time they graduate from school. They basically spend about as many hours in games as they do in school. Now, if you can use that engagement, and that engagement is what it is, but if you can use that engagement to teach them the skills that will ultimately get them jobs and help them discover their passions and make them realize, I love 3D modeling and I love designing buildings, which means maybe I can become an architect, that all of the skills, again, of making a game are transferable across you know, basically every discipline that's out there. So that's why we teach kids to make games.
More specifically, how does Endless teach kids how to make games? And forgive the question, but do you provide any examples of games that you make?
So the core of what we do is really simple. We throw youth together, mostly high school and college, so a little more sophisticated, capable of making real software. And we throw them together in a community and we get them to build together. In the early days of that journey, we have scaffolded tools and we have programs that we can run to teach them and handhold them. But most youth, as we know, just want to go and make things together with their friends. Like their instinct is, let me do it. And then when I get stuck, help me get unstuck, which is why we have mentorship at every step along the journey. And then we let them build the stuff they want to build. If someone wants to build, you know, and we have themes. So, for example, this competition with Tawazun and Bayanat is really infused with local UAE culture. And so by building games, you also learn about the culture, if you're building games about the culture. But in the process of making simple games, you learn the skills, you get better at the skills, whether it's like I become a better artist, I become a better designer, I become a better engineer. And that means that you're capable of making better and better, more challenging games. And so then you can join a community of people who are building those more challenging games and learn from others who are further along their journey, who are mentoring you to help them to because you're helping them build the game that they want to build. So they're inherently motivated to mentor you. And so there's this kind of self-reinforcing cycle that as you get better, you level up the types of games that you can build and you level up the skills that allow you to build them. And you join a community of people who are at that next level. And we support that whole curve from novice, I've never touched a piece of software in my life, all the way up to professional. I'm apprenticing with real professionals to build real games.
During one of your recent speeches, you said something that really resonated with me, and I think it gets forgotten in education. I know it was forgotten from my standpoint until I heard you say it. You said games are safe spaces to fail. And I think I know what you mean by that, but can you elaborate on that?
It's such an important point. So in school, we fail and we feel bad. We get a bad test grade and, you know, and we go home and, you know, our parents, you know, berate us for the report card. But games are all about failing. In other words, I almost jumped over that level, but I didn't quite make it. I want to make it again. Or I can't quite figure out how to code this double jump and I can't wrap my head around it. Let me figure my way through. And then when I succeed, I get that dopamine hit that makes me want to do the next challenge. And because no one is looking over my shoulder saying that I'm failing. And because the whole process actually is the process of not being able to do something, i.e. failing, and then figuring out how to get over it, I fight the big boss 15 times so I can get to the other side and then go on the, you know, continue on my journey. Games are all about failure and overcoming failure. But in school, you're stamped with the label failure. So games, again, are it's not even just that they're a safe place to fail. It's that the fun is failing and then succeeding.
Endless Studios, I know you don't have shareholders. What is the business model, if there is a business model? Is this a not-for-profit? Can you explain that a little bit?
We've partnered with G42. So G42 are our investors in the region, across actually everything we do. And so Endless Studios is a business, and it has really two business models. The first is that we have contracts for providers, for people who want us to run programs for them. So for example, this sponsorship from Tawazun and Bayanat both has allowed us to launch this game making competition in the UAE. It really is responsible for us being able to be in the UAE. Everything that we're doing in the UAE is based on that. Another example of those types of contracts were building a game in partnership with Mubadala using a piece of IP that they have. We're training local UAE students. They're about to get on a plane to fly to the United States to go as part of a whole college game-making program. And between now and December, we will run them through a whole game-making program where they learn to build a game with professionals. And so we run contracts like that. Over the long term, what we believe is that we're partners with ASU, Arizona State University. For 9 years in a row, they have been rated the number one most innovative university in the U.S., and the number one thing that differentiates them from all other universities is our core philosophy, which is they pride themselves not by how many people they reject the way that Harvard does. In other words, how low is their acceptance rate? They pride themselves in how many people can we educate? We believe everyone should be educated. So the more people we can educate, the better. And so we are partnered with them to really look at how we can scale the quality of a college education and everything that leads up to a quality education that provides a pathway to professional jobs. And in the process, basically, we believe we can dramatically reduce the cost of a college education while also making that vastly available potentially to millions of people. And so that's the ultimate aspiration, is to democratize college education and the whole pathway up to it for everyone at an affordable price. In parallel, that's the company. In parallel, we have a foundation because we understand that not everyone is going to be able to access that. Not everyone is going to be able to pay for that. Not everyone's going to be able to have access to the tools to have that, like a computer. And so the Endless Foundation is focused on running those programs in places that don't have the means to do it, and also making sure that they have the device and internet access so that they can learn these skills and build a pathway to a better life.
Not to be glib, it's an obvious question in hindsight. Did you play video games growing up? Do you have any favorites, or what's your background in that?
I didn't. So it's funny. My favorite games I often use as examples of incredible learning games. They weren't built as learning games. Games like Civilization taught me a ton about history. Games like SimCity taught me a ton about complex dynamics and taxes and basically multivariate equations where when you flip these various knobs and dials, you have complex systems that you have to wrap your head around as like an 8-year-old. I also love playing games like Prince of Persia and Mario the way every kid did. But it was really some of the more complicated games that help youth really understand complicated systems. And so, yeah, those are my part of my childhood.
SimCity doesn't get enough credit because I remember being at a relatively young age. It teaches you about traffic jams, taxes, even nuclear energy to some extent. And I won't get too off course, but I don't think it gets enough credit this day and age that it perhaps deserves.
I'm curious, did you play games growing up, and what was your experience like?
Yeah, I played Myst, SimCity, SimCity 2000, any golf simulation I could get my hand on. It was good.
It's every kid. Yeah. I mean, basically every kid. In the UAE, 90% of kids consider themselves gamers, and most of the other 10% still play games.
It's incredibly popular in the United States, obviously, but I would argue, and I don't have the stats to back this up, this is just an observation, I think per capita, I think it's even more impactful in the United Arab Emirates.
It is. So the UAE and the Gulf are the highest engagement basically in the world in terms of games, but the lowest in terms of creation. There are basically no games created out of here, but there's massive consumption. We believe that should be bridged.
That's where you come in.
That's where we're trying to do, is build a game ecosystem here.
If anybody wants to learn more about how to get involved with Endless Studios. What's the best way that they can do that?
Yeah, so you can find us on social media, and that'll link you directly to the competition pages. You can also just go directly to endlessstudios.com, endlessstudios.com.
Just two more questions, if I may, since you brought up social media. How does that factor in at all? You hear about people spending so much time playing games, but they're also, I feel like it's a little bit divided. A lot of people are spending a lot of time on social media. Does that factor in, to any of the work you do?
Yeah, our whole philosophy and everything we do is that the more we can take people from passive consumers, recipients of something someone else made, and make them the ones that are creating, the better off they are. And so, for example, with social media, a kid flipping through Instagram or TikTok all day long, we know scientifically is not good for them. But on the other side, if they can learn, for example, how to use that as a medium to market their game so that now all of a sudden they know how marketing works and they can understand how to, segment audiences and how to build the most compelling marketing campaigns and how to use AI to be able to do that. Now they're all of a sudden learning AI and that toolkit, that whole flow for the purposes of marketing. Now all of a sudden we've turned social media from something that's passive consumption into something that's creation, something that literally is a job. And so our philosophy in basically everything we touch is we want to take people from consumers to creators.
Along those lines, the topic du jour right now, and this could change in the weeks, months ahead, is technology addiction, smartphone addiction. It's a hot topic right now. That being said, technology is not going away anytime soon. People are not going to be not using smartphones. You sit at an interesting intersection right now, and you already touched on about you want to make people creators. You want to help people leverage this technology to they can do good for themselves. Is it an awkward position for you to be in right now at this point in time when so many people are talking about tech addiction? Or
not at all. And the reason is because I'm probably more worried about tech addiction than most people are. In other words, just to contextualize where I come from, our kids do not touch screens. They're 2 and 3 years old. At some point, we'll have to give them something. But our philosophy is about as conservative as it gets. It's one of the reasons, by the way, that we don't build anything for very young kids, because I just don't think that young kids should have technology. But by the time someone's about to graduate from college, if they don't know how to use technology, they're not getting a job in this economy. And so somewhere along the curve between my kids at 2 and 3 years old and my kids graduating from college, they have to know how to be fluent in the usage of technology to be creators, to be productive members of society. A world in which, just to play a kind of a thought experiment, if every kid in the world grew up knowing how to build software, you'd have a different version of humanity. You'd have much more income and equality than you have right now. You have dramatic income inequality because you have people who know how to create and they're taking all the value. You've got the Jeff Bezoses of the world, and then you've got the people who, have had their jobs destroyed by Amazon. And so if you have a continuation of that, you potentially have a scary world. If you have a world in which everybody knows how to build software, you potentially have an equal and hopeful world. And so I literally think, like, at stake, especially with AI coming, is the future of humanity. In other words, is everyone going to be out of a job pummeled by this tidal wave of AI that's coming? Or are people going to learn how to surf the wave and they're going to be atop the wave? And you can teach as many people in the world as you want to surf that wave, but right now, humanity's not teaching them. And so it is my very fear of technology and technology addiction that makes me want to take people and turn them from passive consumers, flipping mindlessly through social media, or staring at video games for literally hours and hours a day where they're not learning. And it's my desire to take that very same engagement and turn it into something that will allow them individually to lead empowered lives and collectively as an entire generation to build a better world.
And as you pointed out at the beginning of the interview, it's interesting, despite how ubiquitous this technology seems, there are billions still without access to it. And that's what you're trying to solve. So, Matt Dalio, thanks so very much for joining us on Business Extra.
Thank you. I feel honored.
That's it for this episode of Business Extra. Thanks so much for listening. Please remember to follow us wherever you get your podcasting content so you can receive all the episodes as soon as they come out. I'm your host, Cody Combs, and this episode was produced by Doa Farid and Arthur Edison.